This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Come on, girl. Yeah. It's me, Jackie Murray. Give me that look. That's right. Let's get sweaty. Let's get real sweaty. I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill a bathtub full of sweat. All right.
Daddy, who wants to love me sexy?
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. We took a one-week hiatus last week. This is your host, the Cowboy, by the way, if you didn't know that. But we took a one-week hiatus last week, and as all the listeners know, the Cowboy, he really knows his sports, right? I feel like I bring you some knowledge, the guests on the show, you know, my co-hosts all bring knowledge. Well, the Cowboy tries to play sports every once in a while, too, and with somewhat disastrous results last week. Had to cancel the podcast due to a injured knee on the basketball court and a bit of injured pride on the basketball court. It was a combination of the two, and I wasn't able to make it, much to the dismay of the rest of the crew, Andy, Keith, and Cowboy Senior. They're extremely disappointed in me that I didn't just get that cortisone shot and play through the pain, but I just couldn't do it. So regardless, we're back. We're happy to be back. I apologize to the listeners. I will try to be more of a couch potato and not get out there and do anything physical so as not to jeopardize the podcast in the future. With that said, the lounge is, you know, maybe this was meant to be. Maybe it was meant to be. We started out lots of guests in the lounge all the time. And now I'm sharing the lounge with just one individual right now. We may have a guest or two stopping by later, but as of right now, it's just myself, the Cowboy, and my father, Cowboy Senior. Only other guy in the lounge. We got the place to ourselves. It's almost like we rented it. The music's still good. The drinks are still flowing. The cigar smoke's still thick. But, you know, it's come down to this, father and son debating for you. So how are you, Cowboy Senior?
Very good, Cowboy. Yeah, nothing like we haven't been doing for our whole lives since you've been around. Debating sports, something we've always done. This should be pretty natural. Father and son, family night at the lounge. Doesn't get any better than this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, for whatever reason, Cowboy Senior and I tend to disagree a lot. So this should make for captivating listening for our fans. So lots happened over the last 2 weeks. We're going to stick with the NFL. That's what's top of mind for everybody. And I think, you know, that's what I want to talk about. That's what Senior wants to talk about. We think that's what you want to hear about. If you ever want to hear about anything else, check us out on Twitter at PTB Sports Lounge. And just give us your suggestions, and we're happy to talk about other things. But without that, we're talking NFL. 3 weeks in the books. We've had some, as per usual, as I said in our previews, the one thing you can count on with the NFL is that you never have really any idea what's going on. Any team can beat any other team. In a given week, it doesn't matter where the game is. It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. We're looking at you, Drew Stanton. Great work. And it's been a fantastic, on the field, it's been a fantastic season so far. Off the field, it's been an unmitigated disaster of epic proportions, which, again, we try not to get into that stuff too much here. But, you know, Bill Simmons is a guy who I've been reading since before he was on ESPN at bostonsportsguy.com. So that's going back 15 years or so. I'm a big fan of his. And he was suspended tonight by ESPN for 3 weeks. That's 1 week more than Ray Rice, by the way, for comments he made on his podcast calling Roger Goodell a liar and you know, dropping a couple of F-bombs. Not behind ESPN on this one. We're with you, Bill, and you always have friends here at the Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. So with that said, let's get into the action. So I thought the way we could go about this, Cowboy Senior, if you're okay with it, is since we didn't have a podcast last week and we're kind of recapping 2 weeks worth of action and also going to look ahead to week four, that we could make it more of a free-flowing, unstructured type of conversation. And we'll just talk about a team that we think has surpassed expectations, a positive surprise, and a team that's been a bit of a negative surprise. So we can each do one of those and then see where that takes us. So, Cowboy Senior, the floor is yours. Let me have it.
Okay, I'm going to start with my positive surprise because I'm a glass half full kind of guy, so I'd rather start with the positive before I get into the negative. And my choice as a positive surprise so far after three games, even though they just lost in game three, still a positive surprise for the overall effort and overall performance in their three games, is the AFC East Buffalo Bills. I know I believe I was the only one in the lounge that picked them to come in second place in the division and thought they would be a little better. And one of the things I had said was I liked what they had done in the offseason to address their weaknesses from last year. They were horrible defensively against the run last year, and their passing offense was horrible last year. Now, against the run, after three games, they're sixth overall in the NFL. They acquired some run stoppers, and it seems to be working. They're only giving up 83 yards a game on the ground after three games. And two of the three teams they faced have pretty good passing offenses, the Bears and the Chargers, so it's not that they haven't faced a good quarterback or anything. Their passing offense, yards-wise, is only 28th overall, but it's been pretty efficient. Emmanuel, who is everybody's big question mark, and it seemed like that was an agreement we had here in the lounge, was that if EJ Manuel could step up, and not many people believed he could, that the Bills might be able to be a good team. And he's completing over 63% of his passes. He's thrown three touchdowns and only one pick. So he's been nice and solid. They started the season with a great, rousing overtime win at Chicago. Very impressive win that looks even more impressive now that we're in week three, as the Bears have gone on since then to take care of the 49ers and last week the Jets, despite having not even being the same Bears team as they were when Buffalo played them, because they really sustained a lot of injuries. Their defense is quite beat up. Both of their outstanding receivers, Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall, are playing, but
shells
of themselves last week. When the Bills played them in week one, this team was much healthier, and that was on their home field in Chicago. So that was a great win for the Bills.
Yeah, and just to point out, Cowboy Senior, not to interrupt you, but that's what I was going to say, is that Buffalo won in Chicago, and Chicago won in San Francisco and in New York. If you looked at the schedule and said there's one guaranteed win for the Bears in those three games, it certainly would have been week one, right?
And against Buffalo.
So that very impressive win by the Bills. I'm 100% yeah. with you there.
Thank you. And the next week, I mean, okay, come at home playing Miami. I know before the season you would have said easy, but after week one, after Miami kind of thrashed the Patriots in week one, most people I talk to are picking Miami to beat the Bills, and the Bills really handled them with ease, a nice 29-10 last week. And if you want to say they hit a speed bump last week, losing to the Chargers, well, the Chargers look like a very, very good team. This is a team the week before that beat the Seattle Seahawks. So the 22-10 loss to the Chargers isn't a terrible loss. And if you look at the overall picture of the three games and what the Bills did to right the ship of their weaknesses the year before, even though, okay, they spent a lot to get the draft pick, to get Watkins, he looks like he might be the real deal and could be a big shot in the arm to their passing offense. He might be that receiver that was worth taking very high, kind of like a few years ago when AJ team, and Julio Jones were both taken in the top 10 of the same draft. And highly unusual to see a wide receiver getting picked that high. And in those cases, it was worth it. And it's starting to look, I mean, early returns on Sammy Watkins, he could turn out to be worth everything they gave for him. So, again, the Bills, to me, for most people would have to be, say, a surprise 2-1, looking like a formidable team. And going on to a couple of tough games coming up now with Houston and Detroit in the next two games, but we'll see what they do. I give them a nice shot in every game. They're a team you don't want to play right now. I think the Bills are on their way to a nice, solid season. And let's face it, the complexion of the AFC East right now, the Bills are tied for first place with the Patriots at 2-1. You got to consider them a legitimate contender to win this division. And I'll take that into a segue.
Cowboy Senior, let's talk a little bit more about Buffalo. So I'm in agreement with you that they're a big surprise, and if they can figure out a way to go 9-7, 10-6, then by all means, what they gave up for Sammy Watkins is it looks better, right? Because, you know, one of our big arguments against that deal was that Buffalo could go, that could be the number one pick in the draft or the number two pick in the draft. Well, if it's the number 20-something pick in the draft, it's still...
Now you didn't give as much.
You didn't give as much, right? And you did mention... Let's talk about the game this week. Buffalo at Houston. I think it's a telling game for both teams, to be frank. I think Houston has a little more to lose here than the Bills. Buffalo going into Houston... If they lose a close game, well, it's on Houston's home field and, you know, can't hang your head there. Houston, who looked like, you know, for the first 2 weeks of the season, looked like they had completely turned things around and, you know, they were going to ride this easy schedule to being that worst to first possibly type of team, especially with the Colts starting off the way they did. They hit a speed bump. Again, losing to the Giants. I know Andy's not here, but you know, given what the Giants have looked like, regardless of where that game's played, that's a game. If you're a good team, that you have to win that game. I think. So that's really interesting, and I actually like Buffalo in this game. Believe it or not, it's close. It's a kind of a flip a coin for me. The fact that Foster is banged up. And the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick's still playing quarterback for Houston.
The Bills know a little something about that guy.
Well, they do. That
might be something they use to their advantage.
And both teams have pretty good defenses. The Houston's misses Clowney quite a bit, I think. And Buffalo's defense is very opportunistic, and they tend to get turnovers and sacks. And those are two things that Fitzpatrick gives up in abundance. So... I think Buffalo may be able to go in there and get the job done.
Yeah, do what they do best, run the ball, have Manuel, you know, throwing not a lot of passes, but being very efficient. And if he can keep that up with their running game, to me, that two-headed running back that they have there is and when they're healthy like this, is as good as any two-headed combination there is in the league. Spiller and Jackson are both outstanding. And now they're mixing in a nice little passing game with it. The offense is looking good. The defense is shored up against the run. We know they have a good pass rush. They could get in Fitzpatrick's face. And Fitzpatrick doesn't usually react well to pressure. And Keith isn't here to defend the smart guy. But he's walking proof that high intelligence, probably the highest IQ in the whole NFL, doesn't always equate to being football smart. And he doesn't play the game with a lot of intelligence sometimes, especially when there's pressure on him. And beside Mario and these guys are definitely going to put some heat on him. They know that. You know they're going to be dialing up blitzes on Fitzpatrick. So it's going to be a really interesting game. And if I had to pick that game right now, I would pick the Bills also.
Yeah, and I mean, I see it pretty low scoring, 17-14 mm-hmm. type of deal. And I think you make a good point with the running game that – Whoever runs the ball better is probably going to win that game. Because neither offense wants to get into a situation where they're chucking it around, given who they're playing at the quarterback position. I think without with Foster either not playing or playing basically unhealthy. I mean, Alfred Blue looks okay, but Spiller and Jackson are proven commodities, and I mean, they can, you know, if they can go out there and rush for their usual .125 total combined yards, Buffalo controls the clock. Buffalo doesn't turn the ball over. That's their path to victory, in my opinion. And I think they can get it done. I won't be shocked if Houston wins, but to really, looking at the schedule in the preseason, it's not exactly a game in week four that jumped out at you, but it's one of the more interesting matchups of the week.
Yeah, kind of a game you'd like to get a look at. I agree. When you look at this week's schedule, that's one game that I circled and said the game I'd like to watch. No doubt about it. It's going to be a real interesting game.
Excellent. So you were going to segue there, Cowboy Senior.
Yes. Now I'm going to give you my surprise bad team. And as I said, the segue was that the way the Bills are playing at 2-1, tied for first place, I really consider them, if you look at what the AFC looks like, they are a contender to win that division. And that takes me to my surprise bad team, who has the same 2-1 record as the Bills, but really, really has been disappointing and not the impressive team we thought they were so far, and that's the New England Patriots. 2-1 for one reason and one reason only, their schedule. Let's face it, they played absolutely no one. They took a thrashing from the Dolphins in week one, which was complete disappointment. They got totally outplayed on both sides of the ball, especially down in the trenches where most football games are won and lost. They were outplayed on both sides of the ball in the trenches. Okay, in the next two games, their defense definitely looked better. But the offense was putrid. Even though they scored a 30-7 win against the...
Very deceiving. I mean, there's a field goal block. Touchdown Castle threw about 35 picks in that game.
And you had one of them got run back to the one-yard line. The offense really didn't do much. They ran the ball a little bit, but that was about it. And this Sunday was just an atrocity by the offense against a bad Raiders team to be able to mount absolutely no offense in your home opener and squeeze a victory out with, thank God for them, kind of an iffy holding call at the end of the game where that game could have been tied and anything could have happened, and that would have been a total disaster for the Patriots to lose that. Now, if you look at their problems, you can say that they're numerous. I don't want to say that the problems are on defense, because even though they haven't been tested the last 2 weeks by good offenses, the defense has done the job. They've done what they're supposed to do. You've got Chandler Jones all over the field wreaking havoc. They've been solid. Again, you would say, okay, well, show me a test. Let's see them do it against a better opposition. Fine. But at least they've done what they had to do in those games.
I mean, you can only play who's in front of you. And
that's right.
The last 2 weeks, they've dominated on that side of the ball, really, to be frank. They weren't playing the Broncos, so how can you say, well, they wouldn't hold up against the Broncos, right? So
Agreed. I'd say, but that's still a question that you'll ask, okay? You're going to say that the defense is looking good, but the jury is somewhat still out. The offense, and it all starts in the trenches. That offensive line is a shambles. It's a disaster. We look at it, okay, no more Logan Mankins. Now you come in with less depth on that offensive line. Marcus Cannon steps in for Mankins. He was your depth guy. Now he's starting. Now your depth guy is a guy by the name of Jordan Debbie, who has been absolutely atrocious. You've got Nate Solder playing alongside of Cannon instead of playing alongside of Logan Mankins, and I don't know if that's what's affecting him. To me, going into the season, once Mankins was gone, I would have said he was the best offensive lineman on the Patriots, and he has literally been a turnstile, especially last week against the Raiders. I mean, he simply got beat almost every single play. He looked awful. So is it the coaching of Dante Scarnecchia gone, who most people consider the best offensive line coach in the NFL? Are they having trouble making an adjustment? Or is it, if you really look at it, every guy on that offensive line, and this is against the Raiders, who aren't exactly the monsters of the Midway, every guy on that offensive line is losing one-on-one battles consistently, both in the running game and in the passing game. I mean, Brady's not going to survive the season at this rate if you can't expect him to take a pounding every week like he's been taking.
The Raiders the previous week gave up 30 points to Houston in Oakland, and Arian Foster just completely ran over them, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And that's Fitzpatrick, the guy that we're that offense that we're blasting that we think can't put up more than 13 against the Bills. So
to give
you a frame of reference.
And people are pointing in, and people in the media and stuff are pointing out other problems, saying they don't have, all they have is one wide receiver that has any chemistry with Brady, Julian Edelman, and he's not throwing the ball to any other wide receiver. Gronk looks slow, even though he looks okay, and you know the running game's not giving him much, but I still think it all goes down to that offensive line. If you expect another wide receiver or two to step up and gain some chemistry with Brady, well, you got to have time for plays to develop. If he's got time to throw the ball, maybe those other problems will take care of themselves. Maybe we'll see right now there's an offense has no chance. An offense cannot function with an offensive line playing literally the worst football of any offensive line in the NFL. I never thought I'd say that about the Patriot offensive line. They've kind of been taken for granted the last few years. They've always been good. This is absolutely atrocious. If they don't straighten this out, it's going to be a long season in New England. It's kind of, you're kind of like thinking the Boston sports fan has been on a roll for quite a few years. Nobody's going to feel bad for him. Kind of spoiled. The Red Sox have always been good for quite a few years in the new Big Three era. The Celtics were good year in, year out. The Bruins were competitive always. Now, the Boston sports fan has just suffered through an awful season with the Red Sox, a terrible season with the Celtics, and might be about to go through the same thing with the Patriots. I hate to say it. And the only thing that makes you think they may turn it around is the thing we talked about 2 weeks ago when we picked the winners of the Patriot-Viking game, and those of us who picked the Patriots to win, I called it blind faith. That somehow with Belichick there and Bill we trust and Bill and Tom are still there and we've seen them look bad and they come back and look like a bunch of guys in a different uniform. That's the only thing that you have to hang your hat on. And even in all of those times, nothing's ever been as atrocious as the performance of this offensive line so far. There's even Rodney Harrison, even yesterday, made a suggestion to me that they should maybe look into signing Richie Incognito because he'd be hungry, he'd be cheap, and Coach Belichick's the kind of guy that could maybe keep him in line. Well, if you would really have to do that, then that's just a sign of so much desperation in the current climate of the NFL right now to bring in a guy that's obviously a bad actor like that, who isn't that good anyway, that that's even being talked about. Tells you the state of this team and this offensive line. So yes, 2-1 tied for first place. Huge disappointment. I don't care what the record says. Huge disappointment how they played the first 3 weeks of the season. And I'm a Patriot fan, and I am, as I said earlier, I'm a glass half full guy. I'm an optimist. I am extremely concerned that this just isn't going to be a good season, that it's just not going to happen.
Thank you, Cowboy Senior. You know, I think for the first time since we started doing this together, that was actually right down the middle. And you're putting me in a position. I'm generally the one bringing you from way off the reservation back to reality a little bit. Now, I think I'm going to cheer you up a little bit, okay? Because I'll be the first guy to blast the Pats. And they are blastable. And what you're seeing on the field is a manifest of all the stuff that I talked about before. Brady's not getting any younger. Obviously, he's not the guy that he was in 2007 or 2008. Even if he has time to throw, he's not the same quarterback. And he shouldn't be. He's older, right? And doing what they like the Mankins trade in particular, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I just don't get it. Well, you're building for a future that. I mean, basically, when Brady leaves, I mean, it's going to be in Jimmy Garoppolo's hand, and we know how important the quarterback position is in the NFL, and You know, I remember twice in my lifetime, and maybe I'm off base on this, where you had a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback leave and the team didn't miss a beat because the other guy was ended up being just as good, right? So you had Joe Montana, Steve Young, right? And then you had Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, right?
The supporting cast.
Peyton
was really there.
Peyton and Andrew Luck too. So it does happen. But if you kind of look at the pedigree of those three guys there, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, he looked pretty good in the preseason. He's probably not Steve Young, Andrew Luck, or Aaron Rodgers. So there's going to be a downtime. There's going to be a rebuild for the Patriots. And they're stuck in this mindset of we can be good now and still retool for the future. Well, the cupboard's bare now. From the moves they've made, particularly the Mankins move, is manifested. I mean, manifested itself week one. They can't. It just doesn't look like the same offense, to your point, because of the offensive line. So, I feel like they can't play any worse than they've been playing. Right, that game against Oakland, and I mean that has to be the low point. Gronkowski, you mentioned, he doesn't look fully healthy yet. He doesn't look like himself running out there, and you have to think that every week that goes by that he doesn't get hurt, he's getting a little bit healthier, right? So having him back to his old self, should that happen, would provide a huge shot in the arm. The offensive line, as bad as it is, and Cowboy Senior, you're the one that talks about this, is cohesiveness, and they have to play together. Well, they're playing together, and they can't play any worse, so they have to get better, right? And
I hope so.
And say what you want about the Belichick-era Patriots, but since the perfect season, or the almost perfect season year, the Pats have sometimes played down to the level of their competition and have been in more close games. And you could be seeing that too. I mean, I think they're still going to win the division because that's more of an indictment on the division than how I feel about the Pats. But I mean, I said they were going to go 10-6 and I still think they're going to go 10-6. But I think they're looking another early exit in the playoffs right in the face. I mean, and I don't feel right talking about like it's just the offensive line. And I mean, I love Tom Brady. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks of all time, if not the best quarterback of all time. But he hasn't been good. I mean, if the ball's traveling, he's kind of the same stuff we say about Manning. If the ball's traveling more than 15 yards downfield, it's been kind of a slow burn the last couple of years where he's missing deep balls. And I mean, this year, I mean, he just can't complete anything. Out, and you need to have that threat, and maybe it's because he doesn't have a receiver who can get deep, and I certainly believe that that's part of it. But it's an easy offense to defend if you can just go balls out after the quarterback, and the safeties can play within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage because there's zero threat of a deep ball. So they got to fix that. But the defense is good enough to keep that to get them to 10-6. So that brings us to their game this week, which is Monday night at Kansas City. With everything that I just said, I think they're in trouble in this game. I think it's a bad matchup for the way they've been playing. Kansas City's got a pretty good defensive line. They'll be able to put some pressure on Brady. They have a couple of good pass rushers in Holly and Justin Houston, and offensively, they kind of want to run the ball down your throat. I think the Pats do a little bit better against teams that try to throw on them. It's going to either be Charles or Nile the River Davis or a combination of the two. I think it's a very tough game for the Pats, and it's a hornet's nest. That place is nuts, and I'll be very, very surprised if they come out Monday night with a victory.
Okay, well, and I can't believe I'm doing this, being devil's advocate. But, you know, if we have the Pats going 10-6, as you just said, man, if you look at their schedule, this is kind of a game they better win. The schedule doesn't get any easier. And we're saying, okay, they're going to win the division. Right now they're 0-1 in the division. And to me, the only team they played in the division is the worst team in the division. I think Buffalo and the Jets are both better teams than Miami. I mean, Kansas City isn't a real impressive team. Okay, you want to talk about matchup, but they're not real impressive. I mean, they got stuff on their schedule coming up. Cincinnati the week after. They've got Indianapolis. They've got Green Bay. They've got San Diego. They've got Detroit. They've got Denver. They've got Chicago. I mean, if they're going to go 10-6 and lose this game and have two losses going into the Cincinnati game, which, my God, I don't care if it's home. I don't see them, even right now, unless they really improve a lot in the next 2 weeks, I don't even see them in the same on the same planet as the Bengals.
No, Cincinnati's a bad matchup for them, but the other teams you mentioned, there's a lot of those high-flying offenses with bad defenses, and as poor as the offensive line's been, I think they're probably better suited to run blocking, and the Patriots can win, like for example against Chicago, using the let's run for 200 yards and control the clock strategy today. And the Patriots are tough to throw on. You can run on them a little bit, but they are tough to throw on. So, but I'm with you. I mean, do you think they're gonna win? They're gonna win this game on Monday night? I mean, if it, gun to your head, I mean, I don't. I think it's a tough game. If it was in New England, I would feel better about it.
The base a win on would be blind faith that they're going to come out and they're saying it's looking like the game plan is going to be we got to take the crowd out of the game because they're the second loudest outdoor stadium to Seattle. We got to take the crowd out of the game by running the ball and controlling the clock, and it might be a way to right the ship with the offensive line. To let them do what offensive linemen like to do and be aggressive rather than doing a lot of pass blocking, and we're going to try and pound the ball. And yeah, it all sounds good in theory. I really don't believe in this offensive line. They have to do something. You know, I'm kind of like a Missourian right now. They really got to show me that they've been that bad. I mean, it's been awful to watch, and it's hard. It's impossible. All the other negatives we talk about are there. It's impossible for an offense to function unless that group really steps it up, really plays, I don't know, shows us something that I haven't seen at all. And if we're right that they lose this game, and then you play Cincinnati and you're looking at 2-3, and then you got Buffalo after that, who's probably going to be flying in, playing well. Man, oh man, it's going to tap Buffalo. So this schedule is tough. I don't know.
It's as tough as an AFC East schedule.
I think blind faith in you. 10-6, I hope so. Right now, that is extremely optimistic from a Patriot fan.
It's 8-5 the rest of the way, right?
Okay. That one group that I've talked about, I know that's not the only bad thing, but that group, that offensive line, has to play a lot better to go 8-5 the rest of the way.
Four and one in the division, 4-4 outside the division.
Yeah, I mean, we're saying the division's weak, but let's face it, right now, Buffalo and New York probably both look better than the Pats right now. And I hope I'm dead wrong about all this and they turn it all around. But after that game last week, I couldn't help but come out of it as a Patriot fan just depressed about the way they look.
I agree, but it's another game that if you looked at... looked at a couple weeks ago. Oh well, man, Patriots at Kansas City. That's not the bad. So, but it's definitely one that even as a non-Patriot fan, you want to tune in for because it's very, very interesting.
It'll be a fun Monday night. Okay, I hope so.
So I'll go. I'll go next. I'm going to head to the NFC for my surprise teams, and I'll start with my surprise positive team. And this is coming from a guy who picked the Cardinals. I think I'm the only person, except for one fan who contacted me on Facebook. Thank you very much for being the only other guy I know that picked the Cardinals to win the NFC West. But given what they've done, even based on my prediction and what I thought they would be, has been surprising to me. If you would have told me when we were taping that show and doing our preview that Carson Palmer would go down after week one and they would beat, that they would win the games that they're winning. They would beat San Francisco with Drew Stanton playing quarterback. I would have told you you're absolutely crazy. Or even winning in New York, which at the time seemed like, you know, who cares? The Giants are terrible. Well, they just beat Houston in New York. It's home field, such a big thing in the NFL. To get, you know, for Drew Stanton to get a road win is an upset. Just a, and if you look at the personnel that they've lost on their defense, you know, I mean, it's, you know, Dockett and Dansby and, I mean, and Darryl Washington. I mean, the list goes on and on. And they've played, like, if they're not the best defense in the NFL, they're damn close. They're right up there. They've played right up there with Seattle and right up there with – I still think Carolina's a good defense. So we'll talk about that game later. But the and it's almost like smoke and mirrors. Like, you look at the personnel and think how that – like, I didn't think they had a chance in hell to beat San Francisco. And I'm a big Cardinals guy. Like I said, I think they're a good team. But I'm like, can't San Francisco, coming off that loss where they, you know, they were starting the new stadium and they embarrassing blew a huge lead on national TV. San Francisco has traditionally owned the Cardinals regardless of where they play. I think they were 9-1 in their last 10 games. And then with Stanton at quarterback, I thought they, you know, the Cardinals would be lucky to keep it within single digits. And they didn't just win. I mean, they went down a little bit early, but they dominated. They dominated after the first quarter. I mean, it was really impressive performance. And, I mean, they're players. I think it's completely for real. They say defense wins championships. And in this high-flying NFL, everybody loves to see the offenses. But like you've said, Cowboy Senior, if you look at the last two Super Bowl champions, they were both built on offenses that didn't make a lot of mistakes and defenses that could beat you up. And the Cardinals certainly fit that bill. And they have do you have anything to add on the Cardinals? I mean, I don't have enough good things to say.
Yeah, I really like the way they looked. You know, really, it's been the defense, especially since Carson's gone down. I mean, Drew Stanton has basically been a decent game manager. He hasn't thrown for many yards, but he's thrown two touchdowns. He hasn't thrown any picks. He's not turning the ball over. That's what you can ask of him. Andre Ellington's run the ball well behind that offensive line, but he's not a guy that you can give the rock to a whole lot of times. They've lost Jonathan Dwyer. The offense hasn't done that much. In actuality, if you remember game one, the offense was pretty impressive. Carson looked really good. He was moving around in the pocket well, avoiding the rush, completing balls. He threw for over 300 yards. If he could come back healthy and they had that dynamic with a really great pair of wide receivers, Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald, yeah, that to the way this defense is playing. No-name gang defense that's filled those gaps. If they can stay healthy, too, a guy that they hired that they signed to step in for the big loss of Dansby, Larry Foote, the old Steelers.
Oh, he looks incredible, doesn't he?
So far, he's been healthy, and yeah, if he stays healthy, yeah, they're not missing a beat. They're not missing Dansby at all, and you know we know about their corners and their DBs being extremely, extremely good as it gets. I mean, maybe they are right now. Right now, the great Seattle defense, the great Carolina defense, have shown a few chinks in the armor. And right now, the most impressive defense in the league has been Arizona. When you look at who they played and the fact that since Drew has taken over, they're really not getting a lot of support from their offense. They really rely on that defense to win. Yeah, defense wins championships. And like I said, if they can have Palmer healthy, if they can get to the playoffs, which it looks like they're well on their way, and have Palmer healthy for the playoffs, playing the way he looked in that opening game against a good San Diego team. Yeah, you might have been onto something with these Cardinals.
You never know.
Agreeing here, Cowboy.
I think you have to look at their coaching. I mean, the way they're winning, I mean, it's they're so well coached and so disciplined, and that those are the teams that – you know, it's a lot like what we saw with the Patriots, say, back in 2000, right? Undermanned. How the hell are they winning these games? They keep it close and then win at the end. San Diego is good. San Diego, I mean, that's a really, really impressive win. And, I mean, they went in, they beat Seattle the next week, and, I mean, the Cardinals beat them. So I think they're for real. They're on the bye this week, so, I mean – That couldn't come at a better time either, you know, because Palmer's injury is not one that anyone's thinking is season or anything. Like, from what I understand, they're just waiting for his nerve to fire, and now he's got an extra week to wait for it to fire. So, way to go, Arizona. Keep it up. And, I mean, that division is just stacked. I mean, it's – and if San Francisco – we could talk a little bit about San Francisco too. I guess we could both say we're right, because I said I thought they were going to miss the playoffs and that it was all going to come crashing down. And it looks like that certainly could be happening. You said they were going to start slow, finish strong, and win the Super Bowl. Probably a little more of a reach right now. I know you based a lot of that argument on Kaepernick taking that next step. And it's kind of been more of the same with him, which is tons of ability. He makes some plays that no other quarterback in the NFL can make, but he's got a little boneheaditis, you know, and turns it over right at the wrong time. And I don't know. What do you think about the Niners? You think they're gonna right the ship?
I'm gonna say, we stay with what I said at the beginning of the year. Don't judge them now. Let's wait till the end of the season to judge them when they get their horses back on defense. I mean, this defense, when they have everybody present, is as good as any defense in the NFL. Real talented group. Right now, they're not all there. But they can dominate, and then, you know, you don't need the offense to do as much, and the offense can't really run the ball. Kaepernick, obviously, can make some mistakes. You know, he's already thrown 3 picks this year. You know, you got to stay away from that. You look at that, and really, a simple way to look at Arizona as opposed to, like, San Francisco. Arizona, through 3 games, has lost 1 fumble and thrown 0 picks. Play solid defense. Don't turn the ball over. You're going to win a lot of football games. Pretty simple formula. Not that easy to do, but they're doing it. Yeah, when you chose Colin Kaepernick over Alex Smith because of his upside and the dynamics that he gives you, you were also choosing possibly turning the ball over a little more, but to add some more offense. And I don't know. Maybe that wasn't a great decision. He could still get it under control and be better. I still think he can, because he has so much ability. He has a lot that you can't teach, and I love their running game. There's nothing wrong with, if you're them, to not lean on Kaepernick so much and hand the ball off an awful lot to Frank Gore and Carlos Hyde, who's already looking good. And again, that defense is going to get better. Nobody's expecting them to get off to a good start. They haven't gotten off to a good start.
I mean, there's potential here for a horrific start, given their matchup this week. They have the high-flying 3-0 Eagles coming into San Francisco. And, you know, I would say that's – could be probably your game of the week, probably the game I'm most looking forward to seeing this week. It's such a contrast in styles. I mean, I know to win that game, San Francisco, I mean, I would think they would want to run the hell out of the ball and keep Kelly's offense off the field, especially given the issues San Francisco's having in the secondary. And they've been pretty good up front. It's just they've... I think they're giving up the most yards in the NFL to receivers. Some stat about their secondary. I mean, then Philly has been lighting it up, passing the ball with Macklin and Jordan Matthews and your boy Zach Ertz. But their defense has been putrid. So from San Francisco, if I'm coaching the team, I'm trying to control the clock, keep that offense off the field, and win a 24-17 type of affair. But there's also the possibility that they go out there and try to shoot it out with them, you know, because Philly's defense has been so bad. And so, you know, I would just worry about Kaepernick making the mistake at the end in that scenario. And, you know, Foles, he hasn't been quite as good as last year, but he's not, generally speaking, not mistake-prone. So how do you feel that one's going to go? I like San Francisco.
It's an interesting game. An interesting game, because you're right. You can kind of take your pick against the Eagles. You know, even though they're 3-0, the defense hasn't been very good at all. You know, they're just trying to outscore everybody, which, you know, yeah, we talk about teams like that it works in the regular season, and we'll see what happens come playoff time. But it's in a game like this with a team with as much talent as San Francisco has on offense, San Francisco can kind of pick what they want to do. And, yeah, I agree with you. that you can run on the Eagles. Just, and they have the good running game. Just run on them. You might even want to run some of those read options with Kaepernick and have him part of the running attack too, and control that clock, and hope that your defense just doesn't get completely steamrolled by the Philly offense, and you stop them enough times to win the game. Which, and in all honesty, if I had to pick a winner in this game, I would pick the Niners to get it to 2-2 at home against a Philly team, even though they're 3-0, very vulnerable defensively, a lot of fun to watch. They're the most entertaining team in football when they have the ball. And also, as dynamic as their offense is, it's very much based around those running backs, even though they threw the ball to the outside a lot last week because the matchup dictated that. But I know Shady's not 100% for this game. I don't even know if he's going to play.
He's good. They said, because McCoy hurt his head, but he practiced. They said he's fine.
Okay. Well, that keeps that intact, because I don't think you want to, as great as Sproles has been, I don't think you want to give him any more run than what you're giving him. He's built for this role perfectly. I mean, it was a great acquisition for their offense because he fits what they do so well. It's like Shady goes out and he comes in, and it's like, oh my God.
Well, he's filling that same, like the D'Anthony Thomas, Kenyon Barner role from Oregon, right? I mean, it's the same kind of deal.
Yeah, it's outstanding. So, yeah, it's a great game. I mean, it could go either way. It's, you know, probably the lower the score, the better chance San Francisco has. And keep it in the 20s and not like last week with Philly with 37-34. You know, you get into a shootout in the 30s, and I would like the Eagles, but there's no reason why San Francisco can't control the clock.
And, you know, I think the other thing at play here is, I mean, given how Arizona started the season and the fact that Seattle's obviously still in the division, I mean, San Francisco doesn't, I mean, it's almost a must win for them in week 4. I mean, they can't start, if they start 1-3, it's a huge uphill battle to even make the playoffs. And Philly's got a little bit of a cushion built in there already with their 3-0 start. So I know every team wants to win every game, but I mean, San Francisco's going to play this one like it's the Super Bowl. If they don't win this game, it's big trouble. Yeah. You heard it here first.
Physical team. And they could also really wear down that Philly defense if they run the ball. Because if you picture a scenario of San Francisco running the ball on a 7 or 8 minute ball control drive, even if Philly gets the ball back and scores in their crazy hurry up score, that defense is right back on the field again. And by the fourth quarter, that defense could be just completely worn down. And that could be the San Francisco's route to victory, and then just steamroll them in the fourth quarter. We'll see, but for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned and that I'm mentioning, I really like San Francisco in that game.
Agreed. A lot of agreement here, Cowboy Senior. We'll have to change that in
the second
half of the show. So we'll close our first segment here with my surprise, negative surprise. This should for any of our loyal listeners, this should be a pretty easy call. I picked Green Bay to go 14-2 and win the Super Bowl, and that's not going to happen. So, at least the 14-2 part. You never know, but 1-2. Their defense is putrid. I mean, their defense is just bad. And, I just don't know. I mean, you know, I thought that game against the Lions was going to be a shootout. I mean, Green Bay's defense played their best game of the season, and their offense only scored 7 points against the Lions, who are not the greatest defense in the world. They just seem out of sync watching them on both sides of the ball. Like Cowboy Senior said about the Niners, if you watch the Lions-Packers game, it was a turnover, the fumble by Eddie Lacy returned for a touchdown, and then a safety on Eddie Lacy, right? And they just don't look, they look out of sorts. And I mean, I think their defense played over their head last week. I think the what you saw against like Seattle was kind of more representative of what that defense is. I don't know.
Really disturbing is how bad their defense has been against the run. I mean, and what that does is, but when that takes away their strength, because with their defense being horrendous, giving up 156 yards a game against the run, is allowing other teams to control the clock and keep the strength of their team, Aaron Rodgers, on the sideline. And so their offense isn't putting up any kind of numbers at all. Their running game has absolutely been atrocious. Eddie Lacy hasn't been able to crank anything up. Really, their offense hasn't. I mean, the offense looked good in that one game against the Jets because they fried up the Jets' cornerbacks. But even right. that defense gave up a lot on the ground.
And they went down 21-3 in that game, too. I mean, they were very fortunate to win that game with the
way when you can't stop the run.
Yeah, and they're in a similar situation to the Niners in that they have a tough game this week that they're going to Chicago. Chicago, we've talked about after a little hiccup against Buffalo week one, has gone into New York and won. I mean, they won there on Monday night in a game. I thought that's the kind of a game the Jets I thought would win, given the makeup of each team, where the Jets just want to pound it, and Chicago's defense isn't very good against the run. Well, they figured out a way to win that game, and I mean they're a good team, and Matt Forte hasn't really gotten it going yet. And the same can be said for Lacy in that they've had to go against some pretty stout run defenses, particularly Lacy with Seattle, the Jets, and Detroit might be the three best run defenses in the NFL. And so they should be able to, Green Bay should be able to get the ground game working against Chicago. I think they're going to have all sorts of problems stopping Chicago. I thought this about the Detroit game too, but I feel like it could be a shootout. I mean, Geno Smith, for the mistakes that he made on Monday night, threw for 330 something yards against the Jets with literally no receivers, you know? So you would think that Aaron Rodgers with Jordy and Cobb could at least get that done, what Geno did. So, it could be one of those last team to have the ball wins. I favor Chicago because it's in Chicago. I mean, it's a tough place to go and play. I think if it was in Green Bay, I would think the Green Bay had a better chance. But I think Chicago is going to win the game. I like Chicago to win that game. I think they're two very similar teams, and Chicago's just playing better right now.
Okay, here we go. We finally have a disagreement. Okay, and everything you said makes a lot of sense, but I'm going to say what things that point to a Green Bay victory. Chicago's hasn't been able to get a running game going so far. Their offense has been Cutler throwing the ball. That's not really Green Bay's biggest problem. So maybe they won't get the running game going. Also, Chicago is really, as much as they, these wins have been unbelievable because they're really dinged up. Their defense is really hurting. And this could be the perfect recipe for Aaron Rodgers to have an Aaron Rodgers game against a beat-up Chicago defense where they can get everything they get going. They can add Lacy to the mix and spread them out and make these guys run around. And I just see it as a game that the Green Bay offense could shine. And the Chicago offense, which has been mostly Cutler throwing the ball to his receiving core that's dinged up here, also had two starting offensive linemen out last week, the center and the right guard. I don't think they're playing again. And one of the backup offensive linemen. So that Chicago is really, really beat up, and it's a perfect opportunity. And it's just, I don't know, maybe I see it as just the way of the NFL with the parity where, okay, this Green Bay is going to get the 2-2 or the Bears will be 2-2 and they'll be tied. And it's kind of like what we expect. I see this as a golden opportunity for Green Bay to beat a dinged up team. And then they look at the schedule and you see Minnesota the week after and Miami the week after that. And all of a sudden, Green Bay's 4-2 and things are better in Packer land. And that's absolutely possible, even though they can't stop the run. These are teams. Okay, Chicago has Matt Forte, but he's done nothing so far. Certainly Matt Asciotta and the Vikings aren't going to scare him, and the Miami running game isn't that scary either.
Right.
So all of a sudden Green Bay could be 4-2, and you might be backing up on your prediction a little bit. It'll look like it might be hard to be a Super Bowl champion if they can't stop, do at least some semblance of a job in stopping the run. I agree with that, but I see them beating Chicago this week and beginning to bounce back, and with the next two soft games on the schedule after that. So we agree to disagree. Finally, it was about time.
No, and I mean, I can certainly see things going that way. I don't. You know, it's there's a few of these games this week that are just kind of tough games to call. I mean, would you really be shocked if Forte ran for 150 yards in that game? I wouldn't be. I mean, I almost expect it. But by the same token, would I really be shocked if Aaron Rodgers threw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns? No, I wouldn't be shocked by that either. It should be a real fun game to watch. As far as the fun game to watch scale, that has to be number one, right? No defense at all.
That and Philly, San Francisco, the two games we just talked about.
Yeah, and
I could pick two games to watch. I think this week those would be the two games I'd want to tune into.
Well, and luckily for you, Cowboy Senior, we have one at 1 o'clock and one at 4. So perfect.
There we go. I just gotta find a place with the NFL Sunday ticket to watch, and I think I know where that'll be.
Yes, the Cowboy has the ticket, and would love to have you here. So, good stuff there. I think we broke down about approximately half the games. So let's take a quick break. I heard Andy's going to be making his way into the lounge. Better late than never, Andy.
Still
have not heard from Keith. Don't know if he is. I guess we assume he's back on the couch at home and. You know, we'll get him back in the lounge eventually. It's all right, Keith. We still love you here, buddy. So let's go to break. Here at Place to Be Nation, we have a number of other podcasts, whether you're into wrestling, pop culture, or we do have another sports podcast as well, which is our Place to Be Nation Extra Point, hosted by Scott Crisculo and Dr. G, George Rivellino. They do a great show, which I appear on every now and again. So during the break, you'll hear more about that, and we'll be back to take a look at the rest of the week and get Andy's surprises. So, Cowboy out, but just for a few minutes. And suffering the fools to find our way home, to break in these bones.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
I'm coming home tonight. Well, no matter what the cost. And if the plane goes down, or if the crew can't wake me up, we'll just know that I'm alright. I was not afraid to die. Oh, even if there's songs to sing, well, my children will carry me. Just know that I'm. Goodbye, cruel world. Just know that I'm alright. I am not afraid.
right, folks, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed the break. While we were away, we had one of our esteemed colleagues make his way to the lounge. As promised, Andy Flanagan entered the building, pulled up a spot on the couch, and he's already got a cigar lit. What's going on, Andy?
Not too much. How's your night going?
Oh, it's going good. It's going good. Got to spend the first hour just me and my dad talking football, which is something that's happened quite a bit over the years. So we were very comfortable. But I feel like with you here, we're going to go back. You know, we agreed a little too much is what the problem was, and I hope it wasn't boring for everyone. But I think with you here, given your controversial attitude, you know, that attitude that you bring, I think we'll be embracing debate more. So,
oh, I certainly embrace debate.
So the way we were attacking it this week, Andy, was that we were asking Cowboy Senior and I both gave our positive and negative surprise teams for the season, and then we just kind of had open discussion about it. So since you just got here, I hope you're ready to talk. Give us your positive surprise so far this season, Andy.
Positive surprise. How about the Pittsburgh Steelers, who I thought were not very good?
That's an excellent choice, Andy.
Ball up to the Carolina Panthers, who were looking like a really strong team up until that point. So I don't even know. Like, sometimes they just think football doesn't make any sense, and that was one of those games where I thought, this makes no sense. I thought the Steelers sucked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was a little higher on the Steelers than you guys, particularly than Cowboy Senior. I didn't think that they had much of a chance going into Carolina. And what they did in there really impressed me. Really, really impressed me. For the Steelers, you know, it's all about their defense isn't what it used to be. But that offense, I mean, particularly the running game, and particularly Le'Veon Bell, looks like he's really kicked it up a notch this year. And if he hasn't been the best running back in football, I mean, he's second? I mean, he looks and he passes the eye test. He's one of those game-changing backs. Antonio Brown is a top five receiver, as I've said, and he's proving that to be the case. That offense can play with anybody. The defense looked good against Carolina. I don't know if that was so much if that was really them or if it was Carolina. They did suffer some injuries. Pittsburgh defense, which is going to affect him going forward. But this talk of the Pittsburgh 4-12, 5-11, I think is just completely ridiculous and unfounded. When you have a quarterback like Roethlisberger, a good running game, and a top five wide receiver, even with a defense that maybe isn't the best in the league, you can win. I challenge you, Cowboy Senior. You're a guy that likes the let me finish, Cowboy Senior. You're a guy who likes the Bears, right? Good quarterback, good running back, good at the good receivers, shitty defense, terrible defense. So why do you like the Bears yet dislike the Steelers?
Well, I'm going to start by calling the Steelers' pregame start here a positive. I'm like surprised. Even somebody who saw him negative as me. Okay, the game against Carolina. Let's take them one game at a time. Game one, on their home field against Cleveland, not a powerhouse. They blew a 27-3 lead and had to pull it out 30-27. But if they would have lost that game with a 27-3 lead at halftime, it would have been the biggest halftime deficit overcome since the merger. So there's our positive surprise. Steelers getting off to a rousing start, as I always say, showing no character, barely winning that game. But we went through that game after week one, and I trashed them there.
Cleveland's been a little bit better than
that. Then they roll into Baltimore to play the aging Ravens. Again, you want to call them a great team? I don't know. They're okay. They get thrashed 26-6 at Baltimore. This week, they shocked the world, I agree, especially with the running offense. To have both of your backs go well over 100 yards against Carolina, extremely impressive. I'm not arguing that that's an extremely impressive win. However, it begs the question, okay? Three games, small sample size. Who are the real Steelers? The week one, week two team? Was that an aberration? Or is the week three team an aberration? And you have to make a choice. I'm saying that week three, that's just one of those fluke games that's going to happen in the NFL, that at the end of the season, you'll look at it and you'll say, how the hell did that team do that in that game? Because I think they're more the team we saw in week one, week two. And you know what? You guys are probably going to come back at me next week and the week after and say, the Steelers are 4-1. Yeah, okay, they're playing Tampa Bay next week and Jacksonville the week after. If they lose one of those games, oh my God, that'll really be awful. But it's not impossible. But I mean, I am not that impressed with their start. I see one impressive game out of three. One out of three isn't going to get you too far. You got to play well more often than one out of three times. All right, and they won that game based on that running game. And, you know, the combination of Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount was unbelievable. And, you know, the thing you can say about those guys is running backs who have great vision, neither one of those guys will ever get glaucoma.
Oh, senior, with the low blow. The low blow. This stuff's legal.
I say it was an aberration, and the real Steelers are the team that played week one and week two, not that fluke in week three. And they also had the advantage over Carolina that game of coming off of a Thursday night where they had 11 days to lick their wounds and be really prepared. And again, that doesn't totally explain it. That's just them scoring 37 points on the Panthers, where they're saying great offense, shitty defense, great offense that scored 6 points the week before against the hard-hitting Ravens. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to bless them with the title great offense. So the shitty defense part, I completely agree with. I'm with you there, cowboy.
So I think when you look at the Steelers, instead of breaking it down by game, right? You could, if you break it down by half, I think it's a little more representative. They're a bit schizophrenic, right?
Yeah.
They played the first half against Cleveland. They played like they were the best team in the NFL. The next three halves, they played like they were the worst team in the NFL. And then for the next two halves against Carolina, they were the best team in the NFL again. So I don't think they're making the Super Bowl or anything, but I mean, they're certainly not a 4-12, 5-11 team. I picked Baltimore to go 5-11, and I'm willing to right now, right here, you know, stand up and say I was wrong about that team. They're better than I thought they were. Cowboy Senior, you made some good points about Baltimore and their defense. That was accurate. And you know, they're an 8-9-7 team. Pittsburgh probably falls right around there. I like that you're sticking to your guns, particularly with the matchup this week, which is another call you'd probably like to have back would be Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's playing Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is coming off the Thursday game, and they needed all 11 days to lick those wounds because that was the worst performance I've ever seen on a football field. The only one I can think of that even compares as far as just, like, especially on national TV like that, was the butt fumble game. Where it just like all went to hell in like 2 minutes. I mean, they were just Tampa Bay offense, defense. Not only did they get out, I mean, just completely outplayed, like they didn't even look like a professional team, but how many personal fouls are they going to take, right? How many? It wasn't just a matter of skill. They did more stupid things between turnovers and personal fouls and snapping the ball over the quarterback's head. I mean, it was just such an awful performance. And I don't think that performance is representative of that team, but they were, you know, I think I picked him to go 8-8. I believe Andy picked him to go 8-8. Cowboy Senior had him in the playoffs. I think we can all safely say we overrated that team, maybe overrated Lovie Smith and his ability to get the most out of those guys. I mean,
That's really the saddest thing about this.
They were, I mean, it's in essence, it's the same personnel that that Schiano had, and Schiano got way more out of him. It's
there's one difference in the personnel, and that might be the guy we overrated the most, and that's McCown. I mean, he looks horrible. And how the heck that guy did what he did for the Bears last year is beyond me. He looks absolutely lost out there. He looks like the journeyman that he is. I mean, they are dead last in passing offense. I mean, they've played some pretty good defenses, but still.
Atlanta's defense.
I would have thought not Atlanta, but Carolina and St. Louis the first 2 weeks. And actually, you know, that's the funny thing is they get trampled by Atlanta, and Carolina and St. Louis, I mean, what we're calling a very good Carolina team, they were right in that game. And they were certainly right in the St. Louis game. I mean, we could debate whether the Rams were any good, but, I mean, they were right in those two games and then going against a high-flying offense like Atlanta, who didn't look so high-flying the week before, too, when they played a real defense. I mean, it's another, you know, something that we can say about the first 3 weeks in the NFL is, so far, it's been really hard to figure from week to week.
Yeah.
I don't know if the whole season's going to be like this, if the NFL has achieved the parity that it wants and the uncertainty you get from week to week. You know, it's not like, you know, baseball or basketball where you play a gazillion games a season where you say, oh, anything can happen in a given game, and oh, no big deal, one game doesn't mean that much. I mean, in the NFL where you play 16 games, every game is big, and we should start to get some predictability, and we're really not. We're seeing a lot of Jekyll and Hyde from a lot of teams in the NFL, and I know these guys are 0-3, but it's certainly a Jekyll and Hyde 0-3 because the first 2 weeks they may have lost, but they were respectable. That game against Atlanta was just, it was hard to watch. It was that bad.
Season killer. That's what that
game was. Yeah, that could break their back, so I agree.
But, I mean, I think it's a positive for them. McCown's hurt, so he's not going to play this week. Glennon played for them last year, and at least, again, they were respectable. Andy, what do you think? Do you think the Bucs have a chance going into Pittsburgh?
I mean, honestly, yes. I mean,
I agree with that.
How crappy they played. But, I mean, as Senior pointed out earlier, this is pretty much exactly what happened to Pittsburgh the week before. They got their asses handed to them on Thursday night, and then they had 11 days to recover and, you know, regroup and maybe change some things. So, yeah, I don't think Pittsburgh is unbeatable by any means, and it's entirely possible that a different Tampa Bay team will show up, but I wouldn't want to put any money on it.
Right. No, and I mean, I think the game's a little more interesting than it looks just based on what happened last week. Given Pittsburgh, like Cowboy Senior said, they probably epitomize the Jekyll and Hyde nature of the NFL more than anybody. They haven't really found a middle ground. If that bad Pittsburgh team shows up, I mean, they can lose to anybody. I think the move to Glennon's going to help Tampa Bay. And I mean, it has to have been a tough week of practice. They have to just feel like jerks for how bad they look. So I still think Pittsburgh's going to win the game, but I think Tampa Bay is going to put up a fight that has us at least not questioning whether they're the worst team of the last 30 years in the NFL. What do you think, Cowboy Senior?
In a way, you look at it, normally you look at a road game as a negative, but it might be better for them to not be home after last week's performance, where it could get really ugly with their home fans if things get started the way it did last week. And also, Pittsburgh's probably going to attack them totally differently than Atlanta did. I mean, Atlanta was an aerial circus right out of the chute where, let's face it, the strength of this Pittsburgh offense so far has been that running game. The running game is, I mean, it's the number one yardage running game, mostly just because of last week where they piled up so many yards, but number one in rushing yards in the NFL. Or does Pittsburgh look at what happened last week and say, you know, let's let Ben just come out and turn it loose against these guys and let's put them away early? It's going to be interesting to see how Pittsburgh attacks it. But, yeah, I mean, there's no way to go but up, I guess, for the Bucs. And, yeah, I know. If we're here next week and the Bucs beat in Pittsburgh, I won't be completely in shock, because Pittsburgh's shown that they're capable of laying eggs. And losing to Baltimore was one thing, and getting completely dominated like they did, you wouldn't expect that. And you certainly wouldn't expect the second half that they played against Cleveland. As much as I don't like Pittsburgh, I wouldn't expect Cleveland to go on a 24-0 run against them. So was that any more unexpected than a Tampa Bay win would be this week? No, so it's possible. But then again, if Pittsburgh wins 45-0 after what I saw from Tampa Bay last week, I wouldn't be shocked by that either.
It's true. It's true. Good stuff. So Andy, given so we have Pittsburgh as your positive surprise, who's been a negative surprise for you?
Well, if you remember from my our preview podcast, I was pretty high on the New Orleans Saints this season. I think I had them as the number one seed in the NFC.
And
that's not looking so hot at the moment.
Neither is my Packers pick that we talked about that earlier. We discussed that earlier.
I guess we shouldn't be, people shouldn't take our advice too seriously, I guess.
Exactly. But,
yeah, the Saints, they had that wild game with the Falcons week one where they lost. That felt like a coin flip towards the end. It was one of those, like, who's going to have the ball last kind of games. And right. then got upset by the Browns, which really hurts. But I guess the what people have always said about the New Orleans road versus home split has certainly been true thus far. So I'm worried about that pick. I'm hoping they turn it around, but they've definitely been a negative surprise thus far.
Yeah, and you know, you can throw away the road games almost. Like, I mean, we had talked on the show. None of us were surprised here that the Browns won that game. We had said, the Saints could take a close up. The Saints aren't the same team on the road, and we all know that. What's most concerning to me is how they played at home, only beating Minnesota 20-9. The 9 is good that the defense showed up. I mean, Minnesota's offense is just completely depleted without Peterson, and Matt Castle got hurt. Your boy Bridgewater came in, and he was he was serviceable, Andy, but yeah. by no means is that the any high flying offense. So the Patriots held them 7 points the week before. So the Saints defense did their job in that game, but the Minnesota defense isn't particularly good. And I expected Breeze to have to go off and have one of those, you know how the greatest show on turf type of games, 35 points. For them to only score 20, bit concerning.
Yeah, I'd say that's very concerning.
Yep. Cowboy Senior, anything to add on
New Orleans?
Yeah,
it's a funny thing. Sure, and the funny thing about that is that where their offense usually isn't as good on the road, even though they lost the first two games, they put up more points than they did against the lowly Vikings. They put up 34 in week one and 24 in week two. So that is, I mean, did they miss that Alabama guy, Mark Ingram, that much last week? Is that part of it? Or did they just play down to the level of their competition? Who knows? And, you know, another one of our interesting games coming up this week. They're going to Dallas.
Absolutely. And,
yeah, the Cowboys have been a little bit schizophrenic team, but, you know, the Saints' defense has been pretty good against the run. However, teams have thrown all over them. I mean, even Brian Hoyer was real effective passing against them. So, I mean, is this the Cowboys really their offense? This year has been more about being on the ground with Murray really running really well and Romo being being Tony Romo a little inconsistent, but maybe this is the game that Romo gets it going. That's what I see in that game, and maybe we'll see a shootout. You know, maybe we'll see a Romo Breeze shootout. The Saints offense, okay, took a step back last week, but in the two road games, they played pretty well on offense.
Yeah, and
they are on the road again in Dallas, and they're bringing in a bad pass defense that might be able to slow Murray down and force Romo to throw the ball, and that game could be an aerial circus, a Romo Breeze aerial circus. Sunday Night Football could be a really fun game to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think for the Cowboys to have a chance in that game, Romo is going to have to show up. He's been more, you know, for first week, obviously, he cost them the game against San Francisco. But the last 2 weeks, he's been more game manager. Watch DeMarco. DeMarco Murray, if Le'Veon Bell hasn't been the best back in the NFL, it's DeMarco Murray. I think you can make a case for either guy.
Definitely.
So I think the Cowboys are going to try to run. To your point, Senior, I think the Saints are, given what we've seen from Dallas in the first 3 weeks, I think the Saints are going to commit to stopping Murray and try to make Romo beat them. And I have to think, Andy, that if any team is going to bring out the high-flying Saints offense and wake them out of their slumber, it's the Cowboys. The Cowboys' defense has been bottom 10, and they've played about as well as they can possibly play, right? And the pass defense in particular is awful. They made the right move yesterday, right, where they benched Claiborne and Orlando Scandrick reinstated, so he'll be starting. Claiborne went AWOL, came back after 24 hours. And in true Cowboys fashion, he'll be out there on Sunday. So, I mean, a guy like that, too, he's by all accounts, literally the worst cornerback in football. He does something like that. Why not make him sit? Do you really? I mean, is he really bringing that much to the table for you? Where you're going to put up with that if you're Dallas?
I guess they're just that desperate, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Or it's just a poorly run organization.
There's that too. Yeah,
one or the other. but I, man, it's in Dallas, which gives. I mean, if this was in New Orleans, I would think the Saints were going to blow them out. But
yeah.
The fact that it's in Dallas, I think Dallas has a chance. I'll go with the Saints, just based on again our blind faith theory that. I mean, if they can't light up Dallas, then and they fall to 1-3, it's a big concern, huge concern, especially the way Atlanta's playing. You know, I mean, Atlanta looks like what the Saints are supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think they really need to show something offensively this week and defensively too. I mean, part of the reason I picked them to be so high in the NFC is because I thought their defense was much improved, and it really hasn't been so far.
Who do you like in the game, Andy?
I like the Saints. I think they're gonna turn this around. I think we'll see a better offensive performance than we did last week, even though they're on the road. I don't think that stadium's not a particularly hostile place to play. I think they'll be all right.
It's generally only hostile if you're a
If you're a
Cowboy jersey.
Your name's Tony Romo.
Senior, we sweeping that? You think the Saints are going to take care of business in Dallas?
Well, if you're talking about Dallas' pass defense, and this is the biggest indictment I can make on them. Last week, the great Austin Davis threw for 327 yards and 3 touchdowns on them. Austin Davis of the Rams. So what is Drew Brees going to do? Oh, yeah. I got to say, I like the Saints in a high-scoring game, though. So I think Romo can – the Saints will probably throw the ball on him and get a lead, and I think that the Saints can slow down the running game, but I think Romo can be very productive at home against the Saints' not-so-good pass defense. Good against the run, not so good against the pass. So I see the Saints winning, but in a high-scoring affair.
Yeah,
I see the ball flying all over Texas Stadium in that game.
And if that's the case, and if the Cowboys do lose a high scoring game where Romo plays well, I think they'll walk away from that as a positive because Romo hasn't looked like himself. I mean, he's and I know he's coming off the injury from last year, and he really hasn't looked like the real Tony Romo in the first three games. So even in a loss, if he can get back to his old ways, I think that's only going to benefit them down the road. And I think the NFC East is out. You know, the Eagles are 3-0, tough game this week. I think that the Cowboys are right there in that division. I picked them to win the division, and for that to happen, Romo needs to be the quarterback that he's supposed to be. He can't be a game manager.
Yeah, they need.
They're certainly better than the other two teams in that division. So, yeah. The Eagles are all they have to worry about. But, the Cowboys haven't been bad. And I agree with what you say. If Romo turns something positive to go along with the running game that they've shown, the offense could be devastating. The defense is terrible, but they could have a devastating offense if Romo gets it going. He certainly has the weapons at his disposal, too. So, I got to agree with that take.
And I'm concerned.
We're all into the shootout.
I'm concerned for Dallas with that the defense is actually going to regress. That they've played better than
playing above their heads.
I think they're playing above their heads. I mean, they gave up all those yards to Austin Davis, but they also got the pick six to win the game.
Yeah,
right.
Well, it is Austin Davis.
I think senior. I mean, not to go off on a tangent, but I think you might be underrating Austin Davis a little bit. You heard it here first. The kid's a real NFL quarterback. I like him. He reminds me of Rivers, but You watch him play, Andy? He's a kid, fiery kid. Fiery kid.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's kept them, I mean, very respectable. They haven't lost games because of him for the most part. So, anyway.
No, he really has played way better than anyone could have expected, considering Was he even drafted? I don't know much of his history.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. He was the Rams' third string quarterback coming into the season. That's all he couldn't really beat out Sean Hill. So good stuff.
Well, playing against that Cowboy D may have made him look good. You know, we'll see. The jury is definitely out on Austin Davis.
Yeah, clearly senior. See, it's good that you're here, Andy. Now we can argue again. Yeah. Seeing as that, he just started playing 3 weeks ago. The jury is still out. But he led them to victory over the mighty Buccaneers the previous week. That's got to count for something. So, thanks for the surprises there, Andy. So, some other stuff going on in the league. A couple of rookies going to be starting for the rest of the season. We touched on the Bridgewater one. I think the more interesting one is Mr. Bortles out in Jacksonville. And in typical Jacksonville fashion, they swore up and down, we're not playing him, we're going to let him sit and wait. They lost three games, and not only did they bring him in, but they already named him the starter for the whole rest of the season.
Yep.
So, and I destroyed that pick when they made it. And I'm watching him play. I think he's good. I think he at least has the potential to be a real NFL quarterback. A lot of times you don't know until you see the guy out there in an NFL game. Right, because this
True.
Is so much different than college, and it's some guys just can't handle the speed of the game. Some guys, like Keith would say about Blaine Gabbert, he'd call him, female genitalia, and he can't handle the pass rush. But I mean, Bortles, yeah, he threw a pick six, but what you saw in the preseason and what you saw in the second half last week, he's got an NFL arm. He reminds me of Roethlisberger. He reminds me a lot of a young Roethlisberger, where he's big, but he can move around a bit, and he's not afraid to chuck it up. What do you guys think?
I'm not ready.
One thing he's going to. Oh, go ahead, Andy.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, well, he is going to get to throw it because they're going to be behind in games. I mean, he's playing for a team. They've given up 34, 41, and 44 in their first 3 weeks. They're ranked 32nd in both pass defense and run defense. So he's going to get to wing it around because they're going to be behind, starting with this week against San Diego, I'm sure. And, yeah, I like what I saw from him. I think he's a big, strong kid that stands up tall. The fear is that he gets destroyed this year, that playing a guy too early, especially being on an atrociously bad team, and he's going to be forced to, like I said, it's a fun position to be in. Nobody's going to be holding him back, telling him to try to control the ball on the ground. They're going to be playing from behind constantly, and he's going to get to wing it. And by the end of the season, we're going to be able to make a pretty good assessment on Blake Bortles. But, yeah, I think given the right situation, he definitely has the tools to be a good NFL quarterback. He's the prototype. He's that big, strong kid with a big arm that seems to have pretty good accuracy also. So as far as Bortles goes, I like him. As far as the situation he's in, I kind of feel bad for him.
Yeah, that's the thing is he's going to – I mean, what was it against the Redskins, Andy? Henny dropped back 40 times and got sacked 10?
Yeah. I mean – more than that.
I mean, it's
– that rough and tumble Redskin defense, yeah.
Yeah.
It's – that's the thing you worry about is the kid just going to get David Carr and take such a vicious beating that he's just never the same. From what I've seen of him, I think he might be good for this situation. I think he seems to have that improvisational ability, and he seems like a bit of a, he seems like a tough guy, and he's a big kid, kind of Cam Newton-y in that way, big. And, he's as big as the guys hitting him, which helps when you're getting hit all the time.
Yeah, I'm not ready to change my mind on Bortles after a nice preseason and, playing garbage time against the Colts, who don't have much of a pass rush. And, if you remember, the knock on Bortles is that his mechanics break down under pressure. So I don't think we have nearly enough evidence to say that he's going to be good. And I'll, if he plays really well against the Chargers, feel free to come back and call me an idiot. But
I don't think you're an idiot, Andy. I mean, those are valid concerns that I've raised that I've raised myself. I feel like so far he's passed the eye test. I mean, he's already shown more than Gabbard ever did.
Agreed, absolutely.
And my concern was that he was Gabbert 2.0, and I think you can safely say he's not Gabbert 2.0. But yeah, to your point, we really don't know. But I don't think it was right to name him quarterback. I don't know what they're gaining by saying you're the quarterback for the rest of the season, other than I guess they don't want to hurt his confidence.
Yeah, it's hard to go back once you've given the guy the start to then say, oh, we're going to go back to Henny now. I don't think that's not good for anybody's, you know, it's not good for the player's development. It doesn't help the team at all. It's not like they're winning games with Henny, you know what I mean? They're not going to make the playoffs. So
right.
I think, you know, they had the decision forced on them, which they probably expected would happen at some point. I don't know if we all thought Chad Henny was going to hold up through a whole NFL season with that offensive line.
We made our feelings perfectly clear about Chad Henny. Every single one of them was accurate. We'll see. They did this last year and then got better as the season went on, so they might not be quite as bad. I mean, after week one, I mean, they played Philly tough in the first half. I don't think they're quite as bad as they've looked. I don't think they're – I still back away from my 1-15 pick. I've given them 4 wins. I think they're going to win 4 games.
That's 400% of your
prediction.
That's
pretty optimistic right now. Mm-hmm. You know, they say it's nice to say that Bortles is the starter for the rest of the year, but really, what are the odds that he doesn't miss any time playing behind that offensive line? You know, I mean, he's going to be a blocker going in it if he's still standing 13 games from now. Mm-hmm.
He's a big kid.
he is a big kid.
He's going to need all the beef. So, wow, yeah. So the other one we touched on a little earlier, Teddy Bridgewater. He's going into a better situation, not a ton better, but
yeah,
a bit better. The defense is a bit better. His skill position guys are better. The offensive line's better. Do you think he's better? Do you think he's ready, Andy? This was your guy coming into the season. And I thought he looked okay. Nothing to write home about. He doesn't strike me as the real dynamic type. Like, I think Bortles, I don't think he's there yet, but I think he's capable. I think he's got it in him to be that dynamic, you know, that dynamic quarterback. Whereas Bridgewater, I think you're looking, like, he reminds me of Geno Smith or like a better version of Fitzpatrick, something like that.
Harsh.
No, I mean, you know, like, not that. You know, kind of like he's a little under, you know, he doesn't have a huge arm, right? I mean, he's just, you know, he can, I think you know what I'm saying. What do you think?
Yeah, he doesn't look like a quarterback, basically, right? Or he doesn't look like the prototype, at least.
Right, right. Definitely doesn't look like the prototype. I don't think, that doesn't mean he's not going to be, a good quarterback. But, I mean, do you think he's better than Matt Castle right now? I think it's close.
Oh, really? I don't know. Matt Castle looked good for one game and has been a train wreck since, even before he got hurt this week. So I think it's kind of the same situation. You can't really go back from your first-round rookie after you've started.
Well, they put Castle on IR. He's done. Broken foot. Multiple breaks in the foot.
I don't know. I mean, their line's probably better than Jacksonville's, but it's not like they played well so far. I mean, Matt Khalil was a big name, but he hasn't played like up to his reputation this season. And, you know, with the whole Peterson thing, we don't need to go over that again, but obviously the team's kind of in, you know, they've got a lot of distractions for whatever that's worth. I guess it's a better situation to succeed at least. So, I guess we'll see.
So long-term, guys, 5 years from now, who's the better quarterback? Derek Carr, Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Bortles, Cowboy Senior?
I would definitely go with Bortles just because he's just more that big prototype, and he has a chance to be a really good NFL quarterback. One thing I'll say for Bridgewater, you know, when the things they're saying about him is a guy who likes to move around and reminds you of Geno a little, doesn't have a huge John. When I saw of him in college, and even the little bit I've seen of him with Minnesota in the preseason, he has really good accuracy. he makes some difficult throws. He drops. He's got pretty good touch. Drops the ball into some. And that could go a long way. That, you know, accuracy can go a long way in a quarterback. Even though his delivery doesn't always look perfect and everything, that's definitely an important thing, accuracy. And I think he does have good accuracy. And starting off these next 2 weeks, you're going to have a chance to do a little something, playing against Atlanta and Green Bay. You know, for your first two games, at least he's not going against these ridiculous defenses that have, a decent supporting cast around them. So maybe we'll get to see a little something from Teddy these few weeks. I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. But if you held a gun to my head and said, you can have any one of these three guys as your quarterback for the next 5 years, as you're talking about 5 years from now, I think Jacksonville made the right choice in the draft. If they were going to take a quarterback there, I think Bortles has the best chance to be a real NFL, bona fide NFL quarterback for a long time.
Sure. So I think Bridgewater, his ceiling's like a better version of Alex Smith. Does that sound good to you guys?
That's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. I'd say Bortles reminds me of Roethlisberger. I like what I've seen of Carr, too. I think he's he's good. Gun to my head. I think, but because of the situation, I think Bridgewater is going to be the best of those three. He's going to be at least considered the best of those three. But I think if Bortles would have been on Minnesota and Bridgewater would have been in Jacksonville, I would tell you that Bortles was going to be the best of the three. Andy?
Well, that definitely bears mentioning because Jacksonville and Oakland have not been, model franchises over the last 10 years.
Dumpster fires.
Yeah, that's a much better word. So I think, in a vacuum, you're going to go with the Minnesota rookie over those two. But I'm sticking with my convictions just based on my, armchair amateur scouting. I liked Bridgewater the most before the season, and I have no reason to change my mind about that so far. So I'd go with Bridgewater.
Excellent. So that brings a couple of games. I think these are a couple of easy ones to call. We have Jacksonville going to San Diego, Atlanta going to Minnesota. I like San Diego and Atlanta. I can't imagine we're going to get anything different from the panel.
No, I'd be very surprised if the Chargers lost.
And
I like Atlanta.
Excellent.
I agree. Yeah, no-brainers, both of those games, no-brainers. Obviously, San Diego I like even more. If you told me which one has the chance of an upset, I would say San Diego is more of the sure thing. The fact that they're home, and Jacksonville's a worse team than Minnesota, too. If Minnesota kept it close against Atlanta, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be shocked if Jacksonville keeps it close against in San Diego.
Could be the Blake Bortles show, Senior. You never know.
Yeah, that would be something, but I doubt it.
So a couple of other interesting games this week. Carolina-Baltimore. Carolina going to Baltimore. As good as Carolina looked the first 2 weeks, I mean, they have some questions to answer after that non-performance on Sunday night. And this is not an easy game going into Baltimore. I think it's going to be probably a low-scoring affair. I don't see Baltimore gashing them on the run like Pittsburgh did. But I don't know how many points Carolina is going to be able to score against the Ravens. Tough game to call. Both, I think the teams are pretty similar. I would probably go with the Ravens due to the home field in that game. How do you break that one down, Cowboy Senior?
Yeah, I see a definite low scoring game. Carolina really having trouble getting any ground game going, and the Ravens' defense is pretty stout. Oh man, this is a hard game to call. Low scoring, this is Carolina. Could Carolina just be that defense really be pissed off about what happened to them last week, and what I consider to be kind of a fluke, and come back and just have this great physical performance against the Ravens, who to me are a little better offensively than Carolina. So I give the Ravens the edge. Offensively, I still think Carolina's defense is superior to the Ravens. And intangible, I'm going to give that to Carolina, the more desperate team, the crazy NFL back and forth. that we're seeing, the parity in the NFL, I'm going to say Carolina bounces back and wins this game.
All right. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, it's tough. I was obviously down on Carolina before the season started, and then they were starting to change my mind before last week. I think, like you guys said, they're kind of in a similar tier of the NFL. You know, they're kind of in that middle, could go from anywhere from like 6-10 to 10-6. As for picking a winner, I think I'd also, just for the home field advantage alone, I guess I'd go with the Ravens.
Yeah. It's another real interesting game. A lot of, and you find this a lot of weeks, just given the parity, that there's all these games where it's just, you pick them, you know, just flip a coin.
Yeah.
could go either way. One of the games that isn't like that this week is Tennessee at Indianapolis. So this was looking like a putrid call on my part. I picked I picked Tennessee. Although they do have the same record. It's been certainly, they've gotten there in a couple of different ways. Tennessee's looked every bit as bad as Tampa Bay and Jacksonville the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Awful. I mean, Locker, who we said has to stay healthy. I think they're making up an injury now so that he doesn't have to play. He's been that bad. And Indy with a couple of real tough losses and then came back with a nice nice victory. They look like the class. Even with Houston being winning the division at this point, I think Indy looks like the class of the division. Locke really looks like he's taken the step up to that upper echelon. I mean, he's flat out outplayed Manning and Rodgers and Breeze, the other guys. He's flat out outplayed them this year. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Tennessee to even make this a contest. I see just a complete blowout in favor of Indianapolis. Andy?
I agree with you. I don't think Tennessee's good. I think, especially the Colts being 1-2, they're not in a position to be overlooking any opponents. So I think they're going to take care of business and blow out the Titans at home.
Senior, you got any words of wisdom on this one?
Yeah, I like Indy big time, too. You know, there's some deceiving stats when you look at Tennessee. Their defense looks like it's good against the pass, which is the Colts' strength, but not really. I think Tennessee's defense doesn't give up much against the pass because the teams they've played have just been able to run so freely on them that they've mostly kept it on the ground. And if Indy establishes their running game, that'll just make it that much easier for Luck to throw all over them, so... Yeah, I just see Indy's offense being way too good. I see Tennessee putting some points up because Indy's defense, let's face it, is going to give up some points. But
yeah.
I don't see Tennessee being able to put up anywhere near enough to stay close to them. I see Indy in a pretty comfortable victory here.
So, I mean, you say especially Tennessee's going to put up some points. Go ahead. What was that, Andy?
Who's the backup quarterback who might play instead of Locker?
Well, they have two. So there's Charlie Whitehurst.
Whitehurst, that's right.
We all know what's going on there.
So they're either going to have Charlie Whitehurst or a banged up Locker.
Or Zach Mettenberger.
Yes.
If I was running the team, I would throw him right. That's who I would throw out there. I mean, what's the point of playing Whitehurst, right?
Yeah, we know what Whitehurst is. That's
right.
True.
And Mettenberger seems like the kind of kid that, you know, he's got a big arm. I mean, he's kind of similar to Locker. I don't think
he's one of those preseason stars, too, right?
He doesn't really know where it's going. Well, he was great at LSU, too. It was a lot of fun to watch him off the field issues and injury. Dropped him down pretty far in the draft, but he wasn't a guy like an AJ McCarron who dropped because he's got a noodle arm. I mean, he's got a gun. So, plus, I think he's a fiery kid. I'd like to see him out there, but that's just me. And, I mean, just Tennessee, the offense can't be any worse than it's been the last 2 weeks. I guess you can give him a pass against Cincinnati because Cincinnati's defense is so good.
Yeah.
But only scoring 10 points at home against that wretched Cowboys defense is completely inexcusable. Me, Senior, and Andy could go out there and score more than 10 points at home against the Cowboys defense. With Senior, you're the quarterback in that scenario. Andy's playing tight end. I'm the receiver. But, yeah, nothing. I mean, I thought Tennessee was going to take the step, and, I mean, it's just – I mean, they've looked so bad that I've lost faith in them. I've completely lost faith in them. I think if anyone's going to challenge Indy in that division, it's Houston. I don't think they're really going to challenge Indy. Yeah. So even at 1-2, I think Indy's set up pretty well. And, you know, I don't want to overlook the Thursday night game. So we're taping this on a Wednesday. It's going to be posted to the site on Thursday. And very interesting Thursday night game in the NFC East. We have the New York Football Giants traveling on the road to the Redskins, led by Kirk Cousins. So, senior, you got anything on this one?
You gotta like the way the Redskins offense has looked with Cousins at the control. I mean, they didn't win last week, but they lost the 37-34 game. They put up 41 against Jacksonville, but their offense is something to be reckoned with, and it seems, in all honesty, it seems to be operating better with Cousins under center than it did with RG3 under center. So the Giant defense is going to be challenged. I know the Giants are coming off a big win. This game being in Washington, I honestly definitely like the Redskins. I don't think the Giants will be able to keep up with them scoring. I don't think the Giants will be able to slow this offense down. I see the Redskins scoring a lot of points in this game, and the Giants maybe show. Obviously, the Redskins' defense isn't too great, so the Giants should put some points up too. But then again, you're going to have Eli throw at least a couple of picks. So if you get into a shootout, that's how that goes. And no, even though the Giants played a good game last week against Houston, against a good team, but I don't know. I definitely like the Redskins tomorrow night. In a fairly high-scoring game, the Redskins scoring in the mid-30s again, the Giants may be touching the 20 mark. And Eli throwing a couple of big picks to help the Redskins along. That's how I see it.
So blowout, basically. Blowout Redskins.
Yeah, yeah. A high-powered offense gets ahead of you, forces the Giants to throw. And Eli always is going to mix in his signature pass here and there.
So, senior, you mentioned Eli a number of times, but I think when you talk about the Giants, the first name that should come out of your mouth when you're talking about the Giants' offense is Rashad Jennings and how good he's looked.
He had a great game last week.
He looks every much the bell cow. The Redskins' defense is nothing to write home about. And I think Jennings can really get some work done in this game. I'm not sold on Kirk Cousins. I'm like the only guy who's not sold on Kirk Cousins. But I remember Kirk Cousins last year. Yeah. He came in, he had one good game, and then absolutely sucked the whole rest of the season. He is a better fit for Jay Gruden's offense than RG3, especially the scared. RG3 is just not the same guy. I mean, he's a guy who hopefully for his sake, Cousins plays good enough that they want to keep him in, and RG3 gets to go start off somewhere else. Because his I think it's a mental thing with him, and as much as a physical thing, and that. I don't know how, if RG3 is your quarterback, you install an offense where the quarterback just never, ever runs. It doesn't make any sense to me at all, right? If you're going to have a guy just standing back there and throwing, Kirk Cousins is the guy. But I don't think Cousins is as good as everyone thinks he is. I mean, he had a great game against the Eagles. It was a shootout. I think he comes crashing back down to earth in this game, particularly with the Thursday night thing. If either team makes it to the 30s, I'll eat my shoe. I don't think that it just, you know, you had Atlanta do it last week, but that was just an aberration. For the Thursday night games tend to be very low scoring. And I think it comes down to Jennings versus Morris, which team's going to be able to stop the run. And I like Jennings. I like Jennings, and I like the Giants in kind of a lower, 24-21 type of affair. And that's an upset special, I know. But Cowboy Senior, you're underrating the Giants. Andy.
Would I do that?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping we could overlook this game. But I don't know what to think of Cousins. Like you said, they started him a couple of games last year, whether it was to see what they have or, maybe pump up his trade value. And he was just terrible. One of the you know, one of the few games where the Giants actually looked good last year was against Washington because Cousins was so bad.
Week 16, Andy, against the Cowboys. Against the Cowboys, who were worse than they are this year on defense. Cousins was awful. Just awful. And right. I just can't get that out of my head. It's going to take another couple of good performances from this kid for me to get that out of my head.
Yeah, I think he's been overrated in at least whether the media or, you know, just general fandom, I think, because everyone, it's kind of sad to watch RG3. Like you said, he's not the same guy. He doesn't look comfortable. And I think Washington fans just want to see something different. So everyone's talking up Cousins like he's the second coming of Joe Montana. But he did play great last week. You can't deny that. The Giants defense has problems. I mean, the only time they've looked good so far is when they were playing against Ryan Fitzpatrick. I just to protect my sanity, I think I'll take Washington.
I'm standing alone. I'm always standing alone on Thursday nights. The last time Pittsburgh got beat 26-6. So I hope that doesn't happen again tomorrow night, Andy.
Yeah. For both our sake.
For both our sakes. And we don't need Cowboy Senior coming in with the ear-to-ear grin, coming into the lounge. Very good.
I'm going to be enjoying that game tomorrow night.
The only game we didn't cover is Miami at Oakland. And I think we didn't cover it for a reason.
Yep.
So
I think you're right.
the game means so little. The game means so little and the teams are so terrible. That I'm gonna pass. I refuse to even pick a winner in that game.
Do we want to talk about the possible Tannehill benching?
Nope.
All right then.
Nope. I mean, Matt Moore, Tannehill. I mean, we can talk about it a little bit in that Joe Philbin. I mean, don't coaches, aren't coaches like supposed to avoid media controversies?
Yeah.
As opposed to intentionally creating a media controversy.
Like, isn't that one of the big parts of their job, managing personalities and stuff like that? He's just, I don't even know what goes through that guy's head.
Oh, well, what goes through his head is I want to send a message to Tannehill and I'm going to do it through the media, which is something, like, the player will do that to the coach sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, right. Was it Carrie Williams for Philly said that they had to practice too hard?
Oh yeah, right.
Did you see that? Like, you expect that. Yeah, you expect that from a guy with rocks in his head like Carrie Williams, but not from the head coach. I mean, can you imagine Belichick or Coughlin or something? I'm not sure about Tom.
Yeah, right.
Like, what? So it's just, hey, you got any thoughts on that, Senior?
They're a joke. Basically, that game, that Miami-Oakland game that we're not talking about, we'll have to come up with a different angle, but if it was the only game on, I guess I'd turn to figure skating.
That's the tractor. It's the tractor pull ball of the week. That's what we call it now.
We're going with figure skating on this one. Would drag me away.
Speaking of which, I apologize. There was one more game we missed. Don't know if I did this on purpose. I might have. But Detroit at the New York Jets.
Wow.
There we go. Not a bad game.
It's a good game. It's a good game. Cowboy Senior, you always have interesting takes on the Jets. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure I'm giving the Jets a little respect. I don't think the Jets are that bad a team. And then the Detroit defense with a really nice performance last week. Well, I don't know where that came from, really. I mean, their front seven, we know that they're good, but that defense is still vulnerable. The Jets' offenses look pretty good. You know, Geno's looked pretty good. Last week was a tough loss. The Bears are playing good football. I mean, I know the Jets are 1-2, but I should be trashing the hell out of them. But I really don't think they're that bad. And they're being at home, and Detroit coming off that win last week. Okay, I'm going to call this one, and I've called a lot of games like this, and it's just my view of the NFL, that the Jets go to 2-2 and win this game, and Detroit comes back down to earth after playing so well last week and loses, because I think Detroit's okay. I don't think they're that good. The only thing they're going to be trying to, I mean, out of their control, Calvin Johnson. I mean, the Jets' defense, very, very solid against the run. Pretty good against the pass, too. They are a good defense, but pretty good against the pass, all because of the front seven so far this year. That secondary is in a shambles, and that's what's scary. They didn't do that bad against the Bears' prolific receivers last week, but those guys were dinged up. So I'm predicting a Jets win, but I'm going to hedge them. It's not something I'd lay my paycheck on or anything, that's for sure, because it is possible that Megatron just goes completely off against them and Stafford's just chucking them out there like he can sometimes, and that could be the Jets' undoing. But just got a feeling about this game that Geno and the Jets at home are going to come through and win, I'll say, 20-17 game. 20-17 Jets.
Wow. That was not what I expected, Cowboy Senior. Cowboy Senior, you've been actually right down the middle the whole podcast. Where's the real Cowboy Senior, Andy? Where is he? Did we leave him at Boneheads?
You remember when we talked about the Steelers?
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Thank you. And
remember when I talked about a certain quarterback throwing his signature pass a few times?
You did. I
haven't totally changed.
I guess my reaction speaks to just how biased you've been in previous weeks. That this is such an improvement. But it's great. I'm going to disagree with you on this one. So I think the two teams are very similar, but particularly defensively, in that great, great front sevens, hideous secondaries. I think Detroit is much, much, much more capable of taking advantage of the Jets' bad secondary than the Jets are of taking advantage of Detroit's bad secondary. So to win the game, the Jets have a lot of trouble winning games when they just can't run at all, which is probably what's going to happen in this one. Detroit is able to overcome that, I think, a lot more easy. To your point, they're not going to be able to cover Calvin Johnson. They're not going to be able to cover Golden Tate. They're not going to be able to cover Bush out of the backfield. So it's going to all be about putting heat on Stafford. And, well, I think they can. I like Detroit in this one. I think the Jets aren't going to have an answer, whereas I think Geno is capable of the kind of similar to the Chicago game. He's played well, and he looks good, but he makes the one or two just really poor decisions that cost his team the game. And they're going to go to 1-3, and you already started hearing it a little bit after Geno throws the pick in the fourth quarter of this one to cost him the game. The Jets fans are going to be calling for Mr. Vic in a big way. That's my prediction. What do you think, Andy?
I think the Lions might actually be good. I mean, you know, to give credit where credit's due, I think in an earlier podcast I made fun of Nick Fairley's weight and said he had been a disappointment. And he's been playing really well this year. So, you know, I'd just like to say I was wrong about that one. I think their defense is pretty good. They showed up against Green Bay, certainly. I didn't think that was going to happen. And it's hard to tell what to make of their offense. They didn't look good against Green Bay, but you know, they still have Calvin Johnson. So I think there's a potential that they're very good. I don't think the Jets are that bad, but I think the Lions are clearly a better team, and I think they'll win Sunday.
All right, so Cowboy Senior, you're standing alone with Mr. Rex Ryan this week.
Who would have thunk it? It's me on an island with the Jets.
What a week. What
amazing.
A week. So,
anything's possible.
So great, great show, guys. We covered all this week's games. I was telling everyone earlier, Andy, that we apologize to our listeners for missing last week due to my injury to both my knee and my pride.
Yeah.
And I promised the listeners that I wouldn't be doing anything physical for the rest of football season, just to ensure that the Sports Lounge is there every week.
I'm glad your priorities are in order.
Yeah, now. You know, I mean, it's my fault for trying to stay in shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to let it happen again. I could see the error of my ways, and that's that. But
you're going back in the hyperbaric chamber after this?
Something like that. The but I received a number of calls from listeners. Oh, I didn't get the lounge this week, and I really want to listen to the lounge, and you know, having to tell my story over and over again about why we didn't tape was you know, that hurt the pride even more. So
yeah.
So listeners, fear not. We're going to be here with you from now until at least the end of the football season, weekly doing our thing, giving you the hard-hitting analysis that you're used to. The friendly banter of this crew is unparalleled. But with that said, for Andy, for Senior, I'm the Cowboy, and I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the Sports Lounge, and we'll be back next Tuesday or Wednesday. Enjoy the weekend of football, and let's hope there's no more horrible controversies in the next week, so that we can just talk football. So, anything to add, guys, before we sign off?
No, I'm just looking forward to another fun week of football in the crazy NFL where anything can happen.
Andy, you want to stir the pot any more than you already have, or are you good for tonight?
Yeah, I thought about it, but no, I'm good for tonight.
All right. So with that said, Cowboy out.
Sexy, back it on up and show and prove that loving me sexy is a thing to do. Your body says love me, your mind says sexy. Love me sexy. Wants to love me sexy. Love me sexy. Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy? Lick me sexy. Take off your shoes and suck me sexy. Suck me sexy. Baby, we'll take it and we'll hump me sexy. Hump me sexy. Freak of the week, are you in the mood?